Music there called Wilder Days. I wish I knew you in your wilder days. Morgan Wade is the artist. Check out New Music Today, 2 and 10, with your host, Katie Carter. It is 8:16, and we wish we knew Bob in his wilder days. Tornado Bob.
They're not that wild.
I'm thinking Bob's getting wilder by the day.
There you go. That's the way
this,
to go.
This life in northern Minnesota is starting to affect him.
Maybe.
Every Tuesday morning he joins us. We talk big weather picture. What the is this just is this whole summer gonna be like this?
I would say generally the odds favor. Continue to favor. I put together I will give you a yeah. The odds favor that. It's just the pattern we got into. It just sort of I had a sense for that sort of happening things sort of happening.
You were talking sort of about this, yeah.
I was thinking kind of hot but not necessarily dry, and now I'm just sort of thinking hot and probably dry.
Oof.
So I would say that the sometimes the far northern parts of Minnesota are sort of the beneficiary of the pattern too, because they can, you know, some stuff that misses us to the north will, well, obviously it misses to the us to the north, it'll get them, but a lot of the stuff the systems are deflected northward that would normally hit southern and central Minnesota.
Right.
So we've been in a really kind of, just had that look coming out of the spring that just there wasn't that much wave activity in this part of the country in terms of across the northern U.S. There's a lot of there was some across the far southern U.S., and it's odd that there were some. I would look at the weather pattern and see storm systems coming across the south, yet the southwestern U.S. is an extreme dry, exceptional drought. It's way far drier than it was last year, and people are making the note that last year was a record wildfire season. So
right.
I don't know if that necessarily means it'll be that many wildfires, but it's certainly very dry right now down there. And so that's part of the pattern. And the other part was just not a very strong or consistent jet stream to allow the development of, provide energy for storm development or storm system development across the northern U.S. And we saw that manifested in the form of a rather dry winter. It wasn't, the bulk of the winter wasn't that dry. But that was interrupted quickly in April, where we had 4 inches of rain in about a week time, or just like 5 days. So
yep.
It ended up being very wet April that kicked us above average. But since mid-April, we've had very little, maybe an inch and a quarter of rain, inch and a half maybe.
I'm trying to think. In the month of May, I don't believe I had an inch at
no,
home.
No, you didn't have an inch. I didn't have an inch.
Yeah,
you did.
Yeah.
I had about 4 tenths, half an inch maybe.
Yep.
So
yep. That's sort of where I was at.
Yeah, and that's what we had in May. So in May is the season where the generally where the climatological rainfall just sort of, picks up. We start getting a lot rainier.
Yeah.
And instead we got quite a bit drier. And so in May we started to, recently we're falling rapidly behind what we should be at this time of year.
Yeah. I've got several plants out in the bog that I monitor, leatherleaf and Labrador tea and bog laurel and all. Yesterday, I'm wearing my sandals, and I walked out into the bog, probably 50 feet, and my feet never got wet.
Okay.
And this is normally a bog where, I would be wet above the ankles.
Yeah.
But it's really, really dry, and walking in the hay field is like walking on wooden matches. Everything just crunches. I mean, it first of all the freeze, and then follow that with several days of temperatures in the 90s and no moisture at all. Relative humidity is way down. It just it's incredible. You look at it and that stuff is just dry as toast. It's just amazing.
Yeah, so add that I did have 0.19 inches of rain overnight,
Which I didn't check mine overnight, so I don't know. But I had a little bit of a splash on my truck, but nothing. I mean, you know, just a few droplets on the windshield that had to be wiped off before I could start driving. And by the time, this was at 5:20 or 5:30 this morning, by the time I was out on the highway and driving, the highway, at least out 8 miles out of town where I live, it was dry. I mean, it was dry, and then there were a few patches of wet here and there, but it was, whatever fell didn't amount to much.
So, yeah, if you get south of Itasca County, there really wasn't anything. But then there are a couple of areas of thunderstorms. If you went into northern Itasca County, there are some areas that did get quite a bit of rain, over an inch and a half. Let me try to figure out where that was, because I had the map up in a second ago in my... So it's not far from, right over Big Fork.
Wow.
Yeah, they had there was a 1.71 inch report.
Woo.
So, yeah, a band of heavy rain around the Big Fork area up to about FE, and then maybe it looks like another band, localized band farther north into Coochaching County. And that was then that's extended eastward into the northern part of the Boundary Waters.
Oh.
So
okay.
An area of, probably an inch and a half to maybe close to 2 inches of rain.
So essentially, is that the area where the cold and warm air are intersecting? What's bringing the moisture? Or what?
Somewhat more or less. You do have to have some sort of frontal structure there. Mm-hmm. So you have warm air and cold air. What we have... But we call it a frontogenesis region. Basically, the air is, it's sort of a clash of the air masses, which if you want to put it very simply.
Right.
And so you get, that's an area of rising motion, and it forms thunderstorms and rainfall. Of course, this time of the year, because the atmosphere typically is more unstable, you get thunderstorms as opposed to just a steady rain.
Right.
So that's the case. And in these sorts of patterns, do expect things to be rather spotty. It can be, you know, a couple inches here in one spot, and maybe a few miles away there'll be absolutely nothing. So very hot, spotty, hit and miss type of activity when you get into these sort of hot patterns.
Yeah.
Just the way that they are.
And that's essentially what you're seeing into the future. Into the rest of this month and maybe through the summer is this boundary, this intersection of air masses is likely to occur north of us or we would be on the southern edge of it as opposed to Aiken or Mora or Cambridge or down further south, Twin Cities.
Right. So we have, we tend to, so it's, what is a, there's a big trough over the over the eastern Pacific, and usually when you get wave patterns set up, if you have a deeper trough in the eastern Pacific and you get a larger ridge over North America downstream from that, and when the trough does, you'll see the trough does move into the north, the far western U.S. A bit, but what happens at this time of year is when the trough moves into the western U.S. It moves with a strong heating of the sun over the Rocky Mountains, it moves this hot, elevated layer of air. It moves it up into the upper Midwest, preferentially. So if the wind is coming from the west-southwest, it moves that Rockies air to the, you know, right over to the upper Midwest. If it were coming more from the northwest, it would move that air over to the southern plains.
Yeah.
And so that's the air that makes us this big ridge where you get hot, big upper level ridge where you get hot and dry weather. So if that gets deflected in our direction, which it has been, we get some of the hottest air. And down south, Texas and Oklahoma have been sort of wet and rainy and cooler than average.
What I noticed the other day, I was watching the baseball game, and I thought to myself, wow, it's 97 or 98 degrees in Grand Rapids. And I thought, what? They're playing in Kansas City. What's the temperature there? And I checked, and it was 85. And I was thinking, holy mackerel, how can it be 97 in Grand Rapids and 85 in Kansas City?
Yep.
When you would expect maybe the reverse, or if it's 97 in Grand Rapids, you'd expect 105 in Kansas City. But
yep, that's not always the case. And the pattern that we're in, that again, that dry air, that hot air gets kind of moved up towards our area.
Getting shuffled up here, and there, yep. Then down there, they're experiencing what for them must be nice sunny summer weather.
Yeah, it feels a little cool because
they're like, oh, this is pretty nice.
That the hot air, the elevate, what we call the elevated mixed layer, comes off the Rockies that normally will move straight east and towards, you know, Kansas City, mm-hmm. towards Oklahoma, and Oklahoma tends to dry out starting in June. They get it's still fairly rainy there in June, but then once you get into late June and into July, it really does dry out. And they get a lot hotter weather. We'll see. So that happens, these ridges. Normally, that's kind of a less amplified version of that pattern is normal in summer. Because if you get a trough moving into the west, that ridge kind of, that upper level ridge and hot warm air, that warm air bubble kind of moves over us for a bit and we get our hot spells. But then that ridge, what it'll do is it'll just retrograde a bit. And then it'll move back west directly over the Rockies, and we get back in northwest flow on the east side of that. And then we get our cooler, 70s, maybe even 60s in the summertime that we get when we get into a cooler pattern in the summer.
Yeah.
So it oscillates back and forth between those two things. This year will be more of that. It's being pushed eastward. And that hot air dome moves over Minnesota.
And so you're not seeing anything that's going to return us to a more normal kind of a pattern where we're likely to stay with this ridge of hot air over northern Minnesota at least for a while?
Yeah, it does look like we're going to be, staying above average in temperature and, it may diminish somewhat, but it doesn't look like it's going to dramatically disappear.
Okay.
Because if you look ahead in the future, it kind of looks the same. This trough kind of sits off the west coast, and with time, it looks like maybe it'll weaken a bit. It's been pretty strong within the past week, but maybe that'll diminish a bit. But it'll still be somewhat there.
What kind of physics takes place to bring a trough into the Pacific, into the Western Pacific, Eastern Pacific, and then,
Eastern Pacific.
Eastern Pacific, yeah, California area. What kind of physics happens that makes it stationary? I mean, the Earth is spinning.
And yeah.
Why isn't it moving? How does it get held in place?
This is our sort of planetary scale, what we call planetary scale Rossby waves. And these are the waves that are driven by the source of their energy is basically their wave energy comes from the gradient of this Coriolis force. It's a sort of a framework. It's a figment of our framework of references, which is a rotating frame, and it gets its oscillations from a gradient in what we call Coriolis force. So as you go farther north, there's more spin, more background spin in the Earth. And so as this air, and the air tends to retain its angular momentum as it moves north and south. So what happens is it comes from the lower latitudes where there's less of this Coriolis parameter. There's less, ambient spin,
mm-hmm.
and you deflect that air northward, and in a relative sense, it has less of this spin, less of this vorticity, and so it curves anticyclonically, so it curves clockwise, and then what happens then is it's coming back south again, and then its relative vorticity is greater than its background, and so it rotates north again, so it rotates counterclockwise. And comes back north. So there's an oscillation that gets going.
Yeah, as this sounds air gets like deflected. One of those figure eight racetracks.
So
first you're going one way and then you're going the other. And
yeah,
ultimately what it does is it sort of stabilizes this trough and
Well, it doesn't stabilize things necessarily, but yeah, well, there's an oscillation. It's a sort of a oscillation about some mean state of vorticity. Mm-hmm. So, so we have in that what happens then is these waves, their dynamics, they work only if they're propagating upstream in the flow. So the bigger waves travel faster. So what happens is the bigger waves will get to a speed where they match the flow. So if the flow is carrying them eastward as fast as they're propagating back westward. And so in that case, you get stationary waves and you get these troughs that kind of these patterns that stick in place. And the pattern has sort of there's a lot of internal variability in the system. You have troughs that develop and move cool air over an area. You have interactions between the land surfaces and the ocean surface, you know, land surfaces in the atmosphere. You have interactions between the ocean surface and the atmosphere. So what happens over the land, if you get an area of drought developing and more of that heat that comes from the sun is converted to sensible heat because the soil is dried out, as opposed to being converted to latent heat in the form of water vapor as you're evaporating a wet soil. What'll happen then is what happens is the heating goes more directly into heating the atmosphere, sensible heat, and you get a sort of upper level ridge developing, and that perpetuates the drought. So you get this feedback effect, and then you also have interactions over the ocean, where if you have an area of warm water, that will transfer heat to the atmosphere. Or if you have cold water, that'll maybe not allow that heat transfer to take place, and you have more of a stable atmosphere over that colder water. So this sort of influences all the heating and cooling patterns, influence the wave patterns that develop in the atmosphere. So sometimes you get this case where, for whatever reason, those patterns are right, that you get a stable atmospheric flow pattern, and that persists for a while, and we tend to be in somewhat of a case. We've experienced that over the last month and a half or so, and it's been just pretty dry.
Yeah. Is there any kind of a record kept of these sorts of things? I mean, how long can it remain stable?
Well, at some point, the seasonal transition will take place.
September, then.
Yeah, it'll, you know, yeah. So it can last for a while. I mean, I remember, I think a good analog for drought is for us is 1988. Mm-hmm. That was an exceptionally dry summer over central and southern Minnesota. I remember going to the Boundary Waters canoe area at the end of that summer and noting how high the water levels were. It appeared that they had quite a bit of rain over the summer because, you know, there's a lot of water around in the Boundary Waters that time. So, that was a year where it was hot, really hot, pretty early. It seems like in May it was pretty hot, and then in June it really was dry. And then July it was also pretty dry, but then towards the end of the month it switched a little bit, and then it wasn't so bad in August. So normally that's the time you think, oh, it's going to really get hot in August.
Yeah.
But in 1988 it got a bit cooler, maybe a little rainier in August.
I'm going to have to look at those records,
yeah,
and see what 88 was. I know from a phenological point of view that things were early that year, not as early as the previous summer, 87, but still a hot and dry. I remember that was the year that there was a lot of discussion about draining down Winnie and Pacagama and Big Sandy and Leech, all of the lakes that are reservoirs for the Mississippi, in order to promote barge traffic below Minneapolis.
Yeah. Well, that used to be the purpose of those reservoirs, is to provide a steady supply of water to the mills in Minneapolis.
Yep. And yep.
So, or at least one reason.
Yeah.
So there's also the drought like in 1976 that I remember that starting out and being really dry for a while. That was another dry year. So this is going to be kind of, it looks like it could be pretty exceptionally dry overall, but sometimes just the pattern will switch a little bit. And instead of a ridge, you know, big dry ridge, we get a that that boundary sags a little farther south, and we could get some heavy rain out of it. It's one of these characteristics of this sort of a pattern. You can suddenly get very large, heavy amounts of rain. If you remember 1987, that also was a relatively hot, dry year. But then the Twin Cities, at least down, you know, in that area, they had a boundary come over them. So one night they got like, it was about about 7 inches of rain, and then two nights later they got 10 inches. So they had like a 17-inch rainfall in July that month, and so and that was a punctuated in, instead of a very dry, what was otherwise a very dry year. Yeah. But they got their entire summer's worth of rainfall, plus more than that in just over a 3-day period.
All right. Well, Bob, I appreciate it. I'm not happy to hear the news, but now that I'm going to be allowed to go back into the lakes and start swimming, I expect that if you want to contact me, put a note in a bottle and throw it in a lake, and hopefully I'll run into it.
All right. Yeah.
Thanks, Bob. Tornado Bob, big weather picture. If you would like to ask him a question, you can email comments@kaxc.org.